Members of the House Elections Committee will come to order. We do not quite yet have a quorum. When we do, we'll take some more official action. I wanted to say something at the outset. Normally, I'd start on time, but because my bill will be taken up today and Vice Chair Halverson will be in the chair, I wanted to say something at the beginning, not about the bill, but about the committee trajectory, which is important. I wish more members were here, but this is as much for Mr. Marble's sake as for anyone's, just to give you kind of a roadmap. We don't have that many regular hearings left, including this one. We have six left before the first deadline. And here are the bills that I can almost guarantee we're going to hear. This doesn't mean that we won't hear others. Of course we will. But here are the ones that are front and center that either the Senate is acting on, or if they aren't, they probably soon will, and that are important for other reasons as well. So in no particular order other than numerical order, here are six bills just to be on the lookout for that are fair game to be noticed next week. And Mr. Marble, and for the GOP members, I'd really like to get as much advanced warning of your thoughts on these bills as possible, because we'd like to hear them and pass them in most cases. So we've got House File 334, which is Representative Bernardi's bill on early voting. We've got House File 637, which is Representative Halverson's bill on felon voting control or limitations. House File 664, Representative Lane's bill, which is an administrative or technical bill from the Campaign Finance Board. House File 863, Representative Winkler's bill, which encompasses the Campaign Finance Board, campaign finance reform recommendations. We've got two that do not yet have bill numbers, but they will very soon. One is the bill that was brought to us by some of the county folks, which Representative Halverson has dropped in and will be in, I think, in next bill introductions. MACO and other groups have worked on that. And then another one from Representative Halverson that we will at least take up in part, if not completely, which is the whole issue of integrity, the so-called integrity bill. This would center around, but not fully adopt, I'm guessing, the Campaign Finance Board's recommendations that we discussed in overview fashion with respect to integrity and disclosure of elected officials, such as all of us on this committee and others who are public officials. So those are for sure totally fair game for next week and certainly the week after. And so, Mr. Marble, and for the GOP members, I want everyone to have as much notice as possible, and I, in turn, would like and expect any feedback from those on those bills as soon as possible, so that to the extent possible in advance, we can work out whatever glitches there are. So I just wanted to get that out of the way before we go to our first bill, which is my bill. So I will now relinquish the chair to our vice chair, Representative Halverson.
Representative Simon, I know we don't have a quorum yet, but did you want to just do a walkthrough of this bill and we can start taking testimony?
Madam Chair, if I could, I'd like to, just to get it into the shape that I intend it to be in, if I could move the DE1 amendment. I realize we can't move on it, right?
Can't move it.
Okay, we'll discuss this as if we've moved on it. I'd like to discuss, the bill is basically the DE1 amendment. And all the DE1 amendment does is incorporate some relatively minor changes that the Senate made. And then I'll later want to add another amendment on there, and I can explain that at that time. It's also pretty minor stuff and not, I suspect, the subject of what multiple testifiers will be here to talk about. So let me just talk about the bill. And rather than go through a section-by-section explanation, let me just spell out generally what the bill does. The first part of the bill just makes clear that statutory cities in Minnesota may at their own choosing, adopt a ranked choice voting system for municipal elections. This bill has nothing to do with statewide elections. It's only at the local level that statutory cities or counties or other entities could, if they wanted to, or if in some cases their voters want to, could adopt this system. It's not mandatory. It's entirely permissive. As members know, there are two main kinds of cities in Minnesota. statutory cities and charter or home rule cities. Out of the 854 cities in Minnesota, only 107 are charter cities or home rule cities. I happen to represent the two cities that I represent, Hopkins and St. Louis Park, are both home rule or charter cities, which means I have no dog in this fight. If Hopkins or St. Louis Park wanted to go to ranked choice voting for municipal elections, they could already do it. And what we do today with this bill is totally and 100% irrelevant as to the communities that I represent. It's also totally and 100% irrelevant to any of the other 107 communities. So, for example, if the city of Hutchinson in Representative Erdahl's district, too bad he wasn't here to hear that, but he'll be here soon. If they wanted to do it, they could do it now. They could do it when this bill passes. They could do it if the bill fails. Same for the city of Blaine in Representative Sanders' district. They, too, are a charter or home rule city, and that means they could do this if they wanted to, irrespective of this bill. It's the cities like Edina, like Roseville, and like the vast majority of cities in Minnesota that have to come to us basically on bended knee to ask permission to do this experiment that this bill is all about. So to me, it's about empowering cities to do something that you may or may not agree with. You may think ranked choice voting is a terrible idea. You may think it's confusing. You may think it's burdensome. You may think voters won't understand it. There may be other reasons I haven't even thought about, while you as individual legislators may think it's a terrible idea. You'd never want it in your community. But Edina might, Roseville might, and most of the other communities in Minnesota that aren't home rule or charter cities, they might want to experiment and tinker around with this too. So I'm not going to go through a section-by-section analysis because it's basically part one, unshackling cities who want to try it and enabling them to try it. And part two are some of the technical guidance the cities say they want. They want some guidelines in here, and that's all this is guidelines. I would point out too, members, I've seen the list of testifiers who are going to come up here and talk about ranked choice voting. And I fear that what this hearing will soon become, just strap yourselves in, is an airing of some ugly Minneapolis political issues. Now, I represent St. Louis Park, which is separated from Minneapolis by France Avenue. I love Minneapolis. I work in Minneapolis. I grew up in the shadow of Minneapolis in the communities I represent. Minneapolis is in many ways the engine that makes life in St. Louis Park and Hopkins possible. But I'm very glad that France Avenue protects me from the internal politics of Minneapolis, which, frankly, I don't want any part of. I don't want it to spill over to St. Louis Park and Hopkins. I don't have a dog in that fight. I don't care to take sides in some of the squabbles in Minneapolis, this ward and that ward and this person's uncle and that person's nephew and these blood feuds that have gone on for decades and will for decades more. I have no interest in that whatsoever. None. And so what you're going to hear, I fear, today is bloodletting about grudges and anger stemming from Minneapolis politics. And I really hope that to the extent it's about that and nothing else, please tune that out. I'm not saying people don't have grievances that are valuable and important to air. But keep in mind, whether you pass this bill or not, there will be ranked choice voting this fall in Minneapolis for a mayoral race and for other races. And whether or not you vote this bill up or down, the same is true in St. Paul. And whether or not you vote this bill up or down, all the home rule and charter cities, all 107 of them in Minnesota, can experiment freely with this as much as they want. We know from the Minnesota Supreme Court 2-3 years ago, they heard the argument that this was unconstitutional. They rejected it. They affirmed that ranked choice voting, with the principles set out in this bill, is fully constitutional. I would say that to the extent there are testifiers today that have problems based on alleged racial disparities, their venue is twofold, or their avenues are twofold. One, persuade Minneapolis to drop ranked choice voting if it's bad for their communities, or two, go to federal court and sue under the civil rights laws, alleging some sort of disparate treatment. So if the beef is that there are problems in Minneapolis, then go to Minneapolis or seek redress in the federal courts. But don't tell Edina and Roseville that they can't, if they wish, experiment with a system that we now know is constitutional. So that's all I'm going to say. I fear that we're going to have some interesting kind of an interesting primer in Minneapolis politics and grudge matches, and I think that's unfortunate. And again, I'm glad I live on the other side of France Avenue for those purposes. So, members, that's really the bill. It's mostly just unshackling those cities and enabling them to do what they might want to do. Otherwise, the alternative is that every statutory city that wants to do this has to come to us separately and kind of beg for our indulgence. So if Edina wanted to do this, they'd need a separate bill to come and kind of get on bended knee and ask if it's okay. And all this bill says, basically, is you don't have to do that. It just allows the charter cities to do what all the home, or I'm sorry, the statutory cities to do what all the home rule cities already can do, which is experiment if they wish or reject it. I make no, I have no particular preference on this, and I'm personally not so sure how I'd feel if it came to St. Louis Park or Hopkins. That's really not the issue. It's just about local control and letting these folks experiment. So with that, Madam Chair, I know that there are a number of testifiers who want to talk. I think I'll sort of bring up the rear and I'll stay up here and be interested to hear some of the testimony.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Now that we have a quorum, would you like to move the bill?
I will. I move that House File 367 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. And Madam Chair, just so we can get it in the shape that I think it ought to be in, I'll move the DE1 amendment.
Thank you. Seeing no questions right now, we can hear from our first testifier on the list, which is
Sure.
Representative Simon has moved the DE1 amendment. Is there any discussion to the DE1 amendment? All those in favor? Representative Dowd.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Simon, and you may have gone through this before I walked in, and I apologize. Can you just really briefly tell us what the difference is in the DE1 amendment, what we're changing?
Right. Representative Dowd, thanks. This just conforms it to what the Senate did in its hearing. And Mr. Gehring, I don't know if you could help out just basically. I mean, it was largely technical, but we just wanted to make sure, to the extent possible, we would minimize the differences with the Senate. Mr. Gehring, I hate to ambush you, but if you could highlight just a couple of the changes from the main bill.
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, Representative Dowd, like Representative Simon said, the changes are largely technical. It's just sort of conforming with the Senate language. There's a replacement of the, at one point we used, the original bill used the word township and is replaced with towns here. There's sort of clarification of the process for voter approval in charter cities. So the bill, the amendment now requires that in charter cities that voters must approve a change to ranked choice voting, and that doesn't apply to other jurisdictions. There additionally some changes related to the post-election review process in this amendment, and I think that's about it. They're relatively minor changes throughout.
Thank you, Mr.
Madam Chair, if I may,
Representative Simon.
This one I can explain in more detail, which is I'd like to move the A2 amendment, which conforms to the DE amendment.
Very good. Representative Simon moves the A2 amendment.
Okay, and I've just been told, if I might modify, there's a typo on that on line 1.6 of the A2 amendment. It should be section 11, not section 10. So if I can just incorporate that into the amendment. And Madam Chair, this one I can explain more easily. There are three changes here. One is it removes the section that authorizes the Secretary of State to make rules. We didn't really see why that was necessary. Secretary of State doesn't particularly want to make rules for this, and there's no really need for any rules since they really have no direct rules. So we're getting rid of that. We're also clarifying the ballot format and order of offices requirements. That's standard in any such bill, and that hadn't been done before. And three is requiring that complete vote totals for an office be subject to post-election review rather than just selected precincts. So this wouldn't just be kind of cherry-picking certain precincts. It would be a post-election review of all the precincts involved. So that's the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Representative Dowd?
I just as a point of procedure here, we didn't adopt the DE1 yet. So I don't know if you want to adopt that first and then add the amendments onto it.
Sure, we could do that.
Whatever you want to do. Pointing out we didn't actually adopt it yet.
Let's do that.
Okay, that makes sense. Is there any additional discussion to the DE1 amendment? All those in favor of the DE1 amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The DE1 amendment passes. And now we can take up the A2 amendment.
I'll move the A2 amendment as modified.
As modified. Representative Simon moves the A2 amendment as modified. Is there any discussion to this amendment? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I know we have other testifiers here, but I just wanted to reiterate, because there's some members coming in, two quick things. All this does, sorry for the members of the audience who heard this already, all this does is basically unshackle local units of government who aren't home rule charter cities, allows them to do this. You may not like it. You may not want it in your community. But whether this bill passes or doesn't pass, Minneapolis is still going to do RCV. Cities like Blaine, cities like Hutchinson in Representative Erdahl's district, they're already charter cities. They're already charter and home rule cities, so they could already do this if they wanted, whether we pass this bill or whether this bill goes down. This just says to the group that otherwise would have to come to us for special permission that they can experiment. But it's not your endorsement of this method of voting whatsoever. I don't even know whether it would be right for my communities. And my communities are charter cities, so they could already do this if they wanted. So could Duluth. So could many of our cities. So, and then I just wanted to warn folks that we're going to hear a lot about Minneapolis politics here. I'm protected by France Avenue, which divides St. Louis Park and Minneapolis. And as I was saying, I just think it's important for all members to hear this. You know, I have no interest in getting involved in the blood feuds of Minneapolis politics, past, present, and future. I fear, though, you're going to hear a lot about that today, and that's not terribly relevant to what we're discussing. With that, though, Madam Chair, I'm happy to cede the floor to other testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Seeing no questions for Representative Simon, we can move forward with the testifiers. And the first person on the list I have is Elizabeth Glidden, Minneapolis City Council member. Welcome to the committee. I'll have you state your name for the record. Before you do start your testimony, I just want to make note of the time that we've got about an hour before our committee is scheduled to adjourn. So if testifiers can keep that time limit in mind, that would be helpful. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Elizabeth Glidden, and I am one of the council members for the City of Minneapolis. I am the former chair of our elections committee at the time that Minneapolis implemented ranked choice voting. Minneapolis implemented ranked choice voting after a very involved grassroots process. As Representative Simon indicated, we are a charter city, and there was a petition process brought forward by members of the public to put the question on the ballot in Minneapolis, should Minneapolis utilize ranked choice voting or instant runoff voting, as it was called at the time, for our voting system for municipal elections. After that question was put on the ballot, it was approved by over 65% of the voters. So not 100%. We do know not everyone who voted on that question wanted this process, but a very strong majority did so. Before we implemented ranked choice voting, the process of ranked choice voting was challenged in the state court system and did go up to the Minnesota Supreme Court, which ruled that it was constitutional and did not violate equal protection rights for ranked choice voting to be used in our municipal elections in the city of Minneapolis. Speaking personally, one of the reasons for implementing ranked choice voting that was very persuasive to me was that with this system of voting, by which you rank your candidates in order of preference, so 1, 2, 3, you do not utilize a primary. And for those who kind of study election turnouts, we know that not only are there many fewer participants in a primary, and in municipal elections in the city of Minneapolis, that turnout is abysmally low, but also the demographics of who participates in those decisions at the primary are very different than who participates in decisions at the general election. So that was a motivator, I know, for myself and for others. In 2009, I will say one of the big pieces of news is that there wasn't really a big news story about the implementation of ranked choice voting in Minneapolis for the first time. I will say, too, it was a kind of boring year just in terms of we did not have a big challenge in the mayor's race, and the mayor's race often drives election turnout. We think that's going to be different this year with our popular mayor, R.T. Ryback, stepping down and there being an open race. But regardless, we know that whatever the turnout was in the ranked choice voting election, there would have been a smaller turnout had there been a primary in 2009. And so more people did participate in that process than had been, than it would have been if we would have had a traditional voting system in 2009. Some other results I think is important to let you know is that there were no lawsuits by individual candidates challenging the results of the 2009 election and use of ranked choice voting in their particular races. We did have an independent evaluation of the process and of some results and done by St. Cloud State. And that process did find that upon a survey, 95% of those responding indicated that they felt ranked choice voting was easy to use, and we thought that was very significant in the first year of using ranked choice voting. Our elections professionals received an award from their peers in a national organization for the system they put in place for implementing ranked choice voting. And I will say, too, that there was only one defective ballot that could not be counted in the election. And by that, I mean there was only one ballot in which that voter's vote was not able to be counted. There is a system that is used in ranked choice voting, which frankly is also used in traditional voting methods, that is called normalization. But normalization, what the direction is from Minnesota state law is that to the extent possible, elections professionals are to do their best to decipher the intent of the voter so that every vote possible is counted. There certainly were votes in Minneapolis, just like in every election, that had to be normalized, but that is different from saying there were votes that weren't counted because there were defective ballots. We know that Minneapolis is not perfect, and we have only had one election. There is work yet to come in analyzing what is data that comes forward. Are there trends that we see in ranked choice voting? And we are going to continue to address those trends. Perhaps unlike Representative Simon, I am used to very vocal concerns being raised in the city of Minneapolis, and I welcome that. I think that helps improve our process, and I think democracy is a struggle, and we welcome understanding how we can improve what we're doing. This is a perfect time for us to hear concerns, too, because we're making decisions about how to allocate resources for voter education and process evaluation, and we'll continue to target those resources in ways that make the most sense. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony today. Next, we can hear from Devin Rice from Minneapolis.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name.
My name is Devin Rice. I am a resident of the city of Minneapolis and a member of the Minneapolis Charter Commission. I'd like to preface my remarks that any data, information, or opinion I share is my own, not that of the Charter Commission. I think I may be the letter of blood as to the Minneapolis politics involved, and I had no intention of making the statement I'm about to make, but I want to explain how this information came to be. Approximately 1 month ago, Mayor Ryback announced that he will not seek re-election. As someone who's been engaged in political campaigns in Minneapolis, I looked at the 2009 election results, trying to determine how is this crowded field of 10, 12, 15, maybe 20 candidates, how is this ranked choice voting going to play out? I discovered a term that I had never seen in my life called voter error. And I'm going to present some testimony about the incident of voter error being dramatically higher in low-income, high-minority wards than any other. And I think, and I say this somewhat emotionally, that, and something I completely had no intention of saying, but my motivation to bring this incident of voter error, which I originally brought to the attention of the Charter Commission, simply suggesting that the city of Minneapolis conduct its elections in the even-numbered years concurrent with gubernatorial presidential elections, when voter turnout is 150,000 or 220,000 versus 45,000 in 2009. My political motivation is simply this, and this is a hard story to tell, but in the summer of 1968, I was 8 years old. I attended the Minnesota State Fair with my mother. While she was in the ladies' room, an older gentleman shook my hand and put a George Wallace for President sticker on my shirt and touched me on the head. Never in my life had I heard my mother shout, scream, and nor had I ever seen her cry. She grabbed me by my hand, she dragged me to the restroom, she washed my hands, my face, and ripped off the sticker. 2 months later, in November of 1968, and this is the honest truth, she took me to the voting booth, the old kind, with the lever. And from my tippy toes, she let me pull the lever for Hubert Humphrey. That day, she reminded me what happened at the state fair. And when I saw the data I'm about to present, that is the only motivation that I brought this data forward to the Charter Commission. I have no candidate that I'm trying to assist in the city of Minneapolis or any reason whatsoever that I felt I saw an injustice in the 2009 city of Minneapolis election. And I would hate to see this method of voting imposed on any other municipality. You should have a copy of my testimony. And ranked choice voting, as we know, was approved by referendum in 2005. And I think what's important to note about ranked choice voting is no technology exists to count those ballots. Only a hand count can count those ballots accurately. No technology existed then, and the likelihood of that existing for the 2013 election is slim to none. I included a little background on the city of Minneapolis turnout, some background on its census information, a city that is 60% white, 40% racial and ethnic minorities. I've also included the ethnic and racial makeup of the 25 elected officials in the city of Minneapolis, of which only two are ethnic minorities, whereas the 24 elected members of the legislature, state house, state senate, and the 9 school board members much better reflect the ethnic and racial diversity of the city, where 33 1/3% are of ethnic minorities. I'd like to take a moment to review the Supreme Court decision from 2009. There was seven assertions that the city of Minneapolis and Fair Vote argued before our Supreme Court. Four of those seven were false. The city argued that it would reduce costs, and indeed those costs increased by over 30%. I have a copy of a report to the Ways and Means Committee of the city that will show the cost increase from $1.1 million to $1.4, almost $1.5 million. Now, granted, there was significant costs associated with implementing ranked choice voting. There was educational expense and I believe some grants afforded to the city. But the simple reality is our city argued before the Supreme Court that it would reduce costs, and it didn't. They argued that and stated assertively that IRV will increase voter turnout. Turnout fell by 34%. Now, arguably, there was a uncontested mayor's race, few city council races, but what I will submit is there was more money raised and spent, according to campaign finance reports, in 2009 than there was in 2005. Three proffers were offered by Fair Vote before the Supreme Court. The first was that IRV promotes the elections of candidates with majority mandates, eliminating plurality winners in one-seat races.
And Mr. Rice, I just want to make note regarding time.
Okay, I'll speed up.
We've got a lot of testifiers, so okay. I want to be sure everybody gets their chance. So
okay,
thank you.
But it simply wasn't true. In Park Board 5, you know, Minneapolis uses what's called the Gregory Method. The Gregory Method was developed by Mr. J.B. Gregory, who served under Queen Victoria in the British penal colony of Tasmania in 1880. It is used, it's absolutely true, But here's the simple reality. In that park board race, the results are attached. The way the Gregory method works, and parenthetically, it's the same way they determine best picture and best actor at the Academy Awards, but they eliminate the lowest vote getter when it is determined that they can't achieve 50%. So in that race, Carol Kummer was declared the winner with 46.9% of the vote. When it became mathematically impossible for her opponent to achieve 50%. More importantly, Carol Kummer, the winner of that race, there was no mathematical or possible way for her to achieve a 50%. It is a complete fallacy that ranked choice voting eliminates plurality winners. There are innumerable mathematical equations that will demonstrate it time and time again, but it does not in any way, in most cases it may, but it does not eliminate plurality winners. A second proffer was that it ensures more diverse representation amongst minority voters. An incumbent African-American woman, the top vote getter in the 2005 Park Board at Large race, lost. Now, the reason I mention this, these are proffers and arguments before the Supreme Court. Now, the court ruled that on its face it was constitutional, and I think we all agree. But they did not say how it would be applied. It has been applied, and I think there's some demonstrations of some very significant data that as it was applied, it certainly didn't meet the seven proffers argued by the city in fair vote. Now, incidents of voter error. I've included two charts that are posted on the City of Minneapolis website, and I've included a second with some of my notations. Any overvote was caught by the machine. Any undervote, I don't think we need to talk about. An undervote, they didn't vote on the ballot. Now, many, if not most, of these examples, it is discernible what the voter's intent was. In some of them, it's not. For example, if you voted A blank blank, you've disenfranchised yourself from the second and third choice. If you voted AB blank, you've disenfranchised yourself from a third vote. Those two incidents of error were not included in the election results. Now, the incident of error
and,
citywide.
And Mr. Rice, are you close to wrapping up your
I'm
comments?
Very close.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
The incident of error citywide was 6.4%. And let me just, for the sake of time, I'll skip directly to two ward comparisons in the precinct I live versus the precinct I grew up. Ward 5, located on the Minneapolis North Side, is the only minority-majority ward as defined by the Voting Rights Act. Over 50% of its adults are African-American, versus Ward 13, which is predominantly white, affluent, better educated. The incident of error on the North Side in Ward 5 was 14.3%. The incident of error in the affluent 13th ward was 4%. An incidence of over three times greater. Let me compare Ward 11, Precinct 5, where I've lived for the last 14 years, versus Ward 5, Precinct 1, where
I
grew up
and
my mother voted in 2009.
Mr. Rice, we do have about 10 other people that are waiting to testify.
Then I'll submit my testimony, but I will say that the incident of voter error where I live is overwhelmingly white, and the incidence was 10 times greater. I think, in conclusion, I would simply state that that ranked choice voting may be an acceptable way to determine best picture or best actor, but it is no way to conduct an election. I would welcome an opportunity to come back. There are numerous technical issues with the bill that I wanted to discuss. But I want to conclude that I assure you in no way am I trying to let any political blood or support a specific candidate. I simply saw an injustice that demonstrates a clear evidence of voter error being exponentially higher. With us today, I have the Reverend Jerry McAfee, the spiritual and community leader of Minneapolis' North Side, who can articulate the concerns of our African-American communities. And we have a number of our Somali representatives is here as well. The largest incident of error happened in a precinct that is overwhelmingly Somali, where 27% of those voters made some type of error. Now, in a memo from Council Member Gordon, he argues that every single voter error ballot contained a valid vote.
Mr. Rice.
Okay, I'm sorry, but
I understand that you were concluding your comments, and we do have 10 other people that have come here to testify. I want to make sure everybody gets their opportunity out of respect to the other testifiers.
Thank you.
So, thank you. I'd like to call down Jim Hovland from Edina. Welcome to the committee, Mayor. Yep. You could state your name for the record.
My name is Jim Hovland, H-O-V-L-A-N-D. I'm the mayor of the city of Edina. Representative Simon. My favorite bumper sticker as a mayor is change is good, you go first. And some of you may recognize that too as elected officials, that change is very difficult. I don't know if our community would embrace this notion of ranked choice voting or not, but we'd like to have the conversation about it at some point in time. I think as a community, we'd like to discuss it. And I don't think it's a good idea to have to come back here one statutory city at a time and ask you for permission to do that at the legislature. I think you should put us on the same sort of footing that you put the charter cities are on by law. Let us have the conversation if we want to. There's over 600 statutory cities in Minnesota. Let them decide for themselves whether they want to embrace this idea or not. Some of the issues that Mr. Rice raised may be issues that get raised in other communities. It may not be right for everybody. We're watching with interest the, I'll still call it experimentation, that's going on in St. Paul and Minneapolis. I think we'd be particularly interested in seeing how this next round goes with all these candidates for mayor. But nonetheless, I think it would be good to have this level playing field, give the statutory cities the opportunity to discuss it if they want to, and have their councils or their communities as a whole make a decision on what they want to do with respect to ranked choice voting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Any questions? Next, we've got Chuck Repke. Welcome to the committee.
Chair, committee members, Mr. Simon, my name is Charles Repke, and I live at 154 West Winifred, St. Paul, Minnesota. I am a registered lobbyist, but I'm here today to speak as a private citizen and as chair of the No Bad Ballots Committee in St. Paul. Thank you for allowing me time to testify against House File 367. I have many difficulties with 367. I have a serious concern about ranked choice voting as a voting system and believe the legislature would resist any effort to impose that on any municipality. And beyond that, I have great concerns about the unfunded mandate that the legislature would pose on every city and county in the state that would be requiring them to buy voting equipment able to read the complicated algorithms involved in ranked choice voting if such equipment were ever certified by the Secretary of State. My problem with ranked choice voting is that it does nothing that the salespeople for ranked choice voting tell you that it's going to do. They tell you that it'll improve voter turnout, that it'll be beneficial to minority communities, that it'll make campaigning more civilized and less divisive, that it's popular in the communities that have switched to it, and that it will ensure that your vote counts. In fact, it does none of those things. That story that it does is nothing more than a fairy tale. You have in front of you, and let me pick it up here so you can see which one it is. You have in front of you the historical voter turnout from San Francisco. San Francisco is the only major metropolitan area in the country that has done ranked choice voting more than once, so it's really the only example I can give you. San Francisco's old system for municipal elections was to have a general election in November with all the filers on the ballot, and if someone didn't get 50%, then they'd have a runoff in December. Their last election run like that was in 2003. They had an open mayor's seat and a well-spirited election that resulted in no candidate getting that 50% of the vote, and a runoff was held in December. That runoff election had a turnout of only 54% of the voters, and it became the focal point of the campaign by Fair Vote to bring ranked choice voting to San Francisco. Their efforts were successful, and you can see what happened to voter turnout since then. In the 2007 ranked choice voting municipal election, 36% of the voters showed up, and in 2011, in a hotly contested contest that spent more money on a mayor's race than any other before, they got to 42% turnout. Get that again, 54% was so bad they needed a system that got them to 42%. Also in 2009 was mentioned the mayor of Minneapolis, lowest voter turnout in 100 years. The next two pages that I've passed out are the election results in the first and last ballot of that San Francisco's mayor's race. You'll note that they had 16 candidates for mayor, and then it took 11 counts to determine the final winner, something that we might expect to happen in Minneapolis this year. One thing that Fair Vote assures you is that you'll always get a majority winner in ranked choice voting. And at first look, it appears that Mr. Lee won the election with 59.64% of the vote. But look again, at the bottom of the page, you'll see that there were 55,000 people who went to the polls on election day and are not being counted on the final ballot. Their ballot was exhausted. For all intent and purposes, their ballot is in the garbage can. 197,000 people came to vote at the polls, and on the last count, only 141,617 people's votes were being counted. 55,625 people didn't count. So Mr. Lee was elected by a false majority. In the real world, he received less than 43% of the vote. So much for every vote counts. This is not an unusual result over the course of ranked choice voting elections. In San Francisco, this happened about 20 times so far. The other reason that I've used San Francisco as an example is that most other cities and counties that have switched to ranked choice voting have quickly switched back. Aspen, Colorado, Tacoma, Washington, Cary, North Carolina, and Burlington, Vermont have all quit this experiment. The next page is the breakdown of the election turnout in the 2011 Ward 2 City Council race in St. Paul. Ward 2 was the only race in St. Paul where the winner wasn't decided on election night and required a ranked choice runoff. I bring you the results of Ward 2 because I want you to pay attention to who showed up at the polls to participate in an election where you're being told in advance you will have a new ballot and will have multiple choices for the candidates. Ward 2 is very diverse. It includes the West Side, West 7th, Grand Avenue, downtown neighborhoods of St. Paul. And its diversity is pretty radical. It has the more than 90% white, wealthy precincts of Summit Hill and the more than 70% minority precinct of District del Sol on the west side. What's interesting to note, if you read through the data, is who showed up for this grand experiment in elections and what is the most common characteristic of the precincts with low voter turnout. It was their higher population of people of color. And this was true citywide. The three wards in St. Paul that have majority-minority members of Wards 1, Wards 5, and Ward 6 all had lower turnout. And the two whitest wards and two wealthiest wards of the city, Wards 3 and 4, were up in turnout. You could find very few Jim Crow laws that do a good of job of reducing minority participation. Now, you might say,
Mr. Repke, I just want to make note of the time, and
okay,
if you can find your way to conclusion.
Four-fifths through. Now, you might say that you aren't making anyone switch to ranked choice voting. House File 367 only allows municipalities to make the switch, and it makes them buy election equipment to count those ballots. But here's what you're doing. You're unleashing the misinformation campaign that is Fair Vote on all your municipalities across the state. I've also passed out the conclusion order and memorandum from the 2009 complaint that I filed against Fair Vote for their unfair campaign practices in the St. Paul election. I urged you to read through it and judge for yourself the character of the people who are claiming to be the advocates for a fair vote. Fair Vote falsely claimed that the Minnesota DFL, the League of Women Voters, Ralph Nader, John McCain, the President of the United States, Barack Obama, endorsed Vote Yes in St. Paul. They were fined the maximum $5,000 for that violation. I'll allow you to go through that. I have one last comment, and that brings me to the worst part of 367, Section 13. Section 13 requires municipalities or counties to buy some yet unknown equipment at some unknown price that has mastered the complicated algorithms of ranked choice voting, if and when such extremely expensive equipment is ever certified by the Secretary of State. And it requires them to buy this potentially ridiculously expensive equipment even if there isn't one municipality in the county that is using ranked choice voting. The point of this section seems reasonably clear. I have to assume that it's going to be a sales tactic by Fair Vote to convince municipalities to switch to the system. Heck, You've already wasted the money on the equipment. You might as well switch. You cannot pass Section 13 and impose this unfunded mandate on the election equipment that you haven't even seen on these counties and municipalities. For what good purpose are you doing it? Please vote no on the bill. Please start looking at the impacts of ranked choice voting on communities of color and on voter turnout in general. And please start looking up some of this information on your own, and don't blindly trust an organization that's already been fined for their unfair campaign tactics.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? So we can move on to Evan Brown. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, state your name for the record. My name is Evan Brown. I currently serve as the vice chair of the Red Wing Charter Commission and the chair of the Ranked Choice Voting Subcommittee. I'm here to ask you to support House File 367 because as we've been looking at this, we find it very important that the state set some standards for this. We are considering offering it in Red Wing, and some of the issues that we've faced are about what are the standards, and our county elections officials have looked to state law, and they felt, even though they recognize the authority of our charter city to adopt this voting system, they have recognized that it feels complicated. So this bill would help alleviate some of those issues, and so I would ask you to support it. And then additionally, you know, if our residents were to adopt ranked choice voting, I know our city administration would welcome the additional support and authority in statute for implementing ranked choice voting. There are a lot of small cities in Minnesota. There's only three cities with greater the populations greater than 100,000. So there are a lot of cities in Red Wing's position which are small and don't have the resources of large cities like Minneapolis and St. Paul if they were to do this. And all they want is clarity from the legislature about how to approach ranked choice voting. And as a final note, I just note that with all the testimony, I think the state Supreme Court has kind of weighed in on this, and as it stands, the issue is constitutional and legal in the state, at least for charter cities. So I would end with that note, and I thank you for your time.
Thanks for your testimony. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions. And now we have an addition to the additional testifier to the agenda, Andrea Rao. This testifier requested to be added this morning. So is Ms. Rao here? There we go. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. Sorry, I was way back there. I was planning getting ready, but I figured I'd be at the end. So, anyway, my name is Andrea Rao, and I represent Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life, MCCL. And we've already heard quite a bit about ranked choice voting today, so I'll keep my comments brief. But proponents of ranked choice voting claim that the system is needed because we must avoid allowing candidates to be elected to office with less than 50% of the vote. Additionally, they believe that it would allow people to more freely vote their conscience and would avoid having spoiler candidates. MCCL believes that voting is a privilege and that it should be taken very seriously. We believe citizens can and do look at all aspects of voting for candidates before casting their ballot. Our nation was founded by leaders who believe that citizens could be trusted to make knowledgeable decisions regarding candidates, and the election process was set up to convey that trust. We don't believe that the issues addressed by ranked choice voting are problems, and therefore see no reason to completely change our method of voting. For this reason, MCCL opposes authorizing the expansion of ranked choice voting, and we urge the committee to oppose House File 367. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Next, we have Abdi Warsami. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Abdi Warsami, and first of all, I thank you, Madam Chairman, as well as members of the committee, for giving me the opportunity to speak in front of you today. My name is Abdi Warsami. I'm a resident of Minneapolis, Cedar Riverside neighborhood. I'm the director of the Riverside Plaza Tenants Association, as well as the board chair of the Cedar Riverside NRP. And I'm also running for the city council for Ward 6. Now, let me give you a brief background of Ward 6. Ward 6 came about through the fair redistricting process that we champion to create a minority opportunity ward. It has a 43%, estimated 43% East African population. It has the largest East African population anywhere in the United States of America. Now, I'm here to convey the concerns the East African American community has with regards to the adoption of the ranked choice voting and our experiences of it throughout the process in 2009 elections. The East African community is composed mostly of immigrants from Somalia and East Africa. We are a hardworking, family-oriented, and patriotic community that has demonstrated its political cohesiveness over the past. The estimates vary for the East African population, but we believe it's up to 100,000. Since 2008 presidential elections, voter registration and voter turnout amongst the East African community has increased a great deal. This is thanks to the hard work done by community activists and partners in educating our voters. Today, the East African community, or the East Africans, are much more politically active, and more importantly, they're becoming more confident in the fairness of the electoral process. And with this, I mean in terms of the presidential and the statewide elections. It took us a long time to get where we are. As new immigrants, the experience of voting has never been easy for our members. Aside from traditional problems and issues that impact minorities and lower income voters, our members have to contend with additional language and cultural barriers when they attempt to exercise their rights to vote. Those living in Minneapolis now have a much more complex method of voting to contend with. We are very much concerned with regards to the ranked choice voting method. To highlight our problem, take a look at the November 3rd, 2009 Minneapolis city election statistics. It shows a citywide voter ballot error of 6.43%, which might seem low. However, if you look at Cedar Riverside, the precinct that I live in, the voter error for that election was 26.92%, or 27% voter error. Cedar Riverside had the highest rate of ballot error in the city of Minneapolis. The fact that this area is also home to the largest new immigrant East African population in the city, in our mind, is no coincidence. When you compare Cedar Riverside to the more affluent precincts of the city, where you had turnout sometimes three or four times greater than ours, you had ballot errors cast in those areas between 1.74 and 6%. That was very low in the affluent areas. However, again, Cedar Riverside had 27% error. It is clear to us from this data that the ranked choice voting ballot is much more complicated than the traditional method, that it may create greater confusion amongst our members and lead to lower voter turnout. What is also alarming is that nothing has been done to educate our community and the general public. We are deeply troubled that we are being led again into a situation where there will be 25% or more ballot error by ballots cast by the East African community. We have learned in the past and educated our community on how to vote in state and federal elections, but this ranked choice voting changes the game entirely. We are concerned it will set us back and reduce overall voter participation for all minorities, and especially for those who are not proficient in the English language. Elections should be simple and straightforward, the method employed fair, and the aim should be to empower every voter. We are an immigrant community who are seeking the American dream and believe that the best way to achieve this is through greater participation in the political process. We are no experts and don't understand all the ramifications of this. Now, today, there are East Africans all around the state, no longer confined to a single location. Today, you will find our members in the Twin Cities, the suburbs, in St. Cloud, Fargo, Rochester, and Wilmer. Our community is growing, and day by day, and it's becoming more Minnesotan. We would like our concerns regarding this issue to be addressed. All that we're asking for is a fair and just voting method in which every vote is counted. We would not want to see our peoples disenfranchised. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, our next testifier is Mohammed Noor. Welcome to the committee, and you can state your name for the record, please.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mahmoud Noor. I'm a resident of the city of Minneapolis, not the city that Representative Simons just described. I'm not part of that political fight. We like to agree to disagree, and that's part of politics and democracy as a whole. Much has already been said. I don't want to repeat the same statements just to make an impact. We all know that electoral process or system is not perfect. All elections can have problems with or without the ranked choice voting. We have already seen tons of problems just from the previous election, whereby the high turnout, the number of people waiting to vote, the number of people waiting to be registered to vote, those are issues which people did not even have, the bilingual workers. Those are separate issues from the ranked choice voting. Now, we are at the starting point in the city of Minneapolis in using ranked choice voting. We need to give it a chance so that it can succeed. It has been proven and used 45 times in San Francisco. The outcome is clear. 16 of the 18 office holders are people of minority. So it may end up giving the minorities an opportunity to win elections. And that's a fact. We know that there are so many issues that need to be addressed in between. And to be more successful, we need to make sure that the voter outreach, voter education, is equal in many ways and helping new immigrants succeed in terms of voting. It's really critical for our government of representation, representative government, to reflect the people we represent. So in order to have that kind of a change, we need to make sure that what we have started is not dismantled and we go back to the way the old process is. Now let me tell you my own experience. In 2009, I moved from St. Paul based on moving back and forth in different areas. So people tend to move from one city to the other. Didn't know much about the ranked choice voting. It was my first time to be introduced. I had only a brief time for me to be educated about how does this system work. I may be speaking from a privileged perspective because I can read and understand the process. There are others who don't have that opportunity. If we can give them the equal access and information, the system will work, and we need to give it a chance. With that limited time, I was able to vote in the ranked choice voting, and I felt comfortable voting through that process. I'm not minimizing the issues that exist with the ranked choice voting. I'm not an expert to come and speak in front of you on this issue. But we have to be conscious about what needs to happen to make it successful. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony. And I apologize for mispronouncing your name at the beginning.
Anytime. I'm used to that.
Seeing no questions, we can invite Kim Ellison.
Hi.
Welcome to the committee.
And thank you.
When
my name
you
is
start
Kim
settled.
Ellison. I'm a lifelong voter, North Minneapolis resident, and I'm a Fair Vote volunteer educator in 2009 in Minneapolis and again in 2011 in St. Paul. I was in the communities educating voters about the change and what the ballot would look like when they went in to vote in their local election that year. While people walked in and often looked a little confused, it was people generally liked being able to choose. I heard comments like, a lot of times I go in and I don't know who I want to vote for, really feeling this candidate but also considering this other candidate, and the fact that I can rank them makes me more likely to want to go in and really look at their issues and consider why I would choose one over another and then be able to rank them. You don't have to, which a lot of voters also were pleased with. I can choose this one guy, this is who I really want, I'm just going to put them down as my first choice, and I don't have to rank everybody. In 2009, I want to point out that every ballot was counted. No voter was disenfranchised in Minneapolis. And I got involved, well, I'm a lifelong voter, got involved in politics, I can say, kind of kicking and screaming, didn't really want to get involved, that involved in politics. The politics of fear, I would contend, keep many more voters out of the ballot box than ranked choice voting ever could. When I did get involved, and especially educating about the ranked choice voting, what I saw and what I appreciate once I got involved in politics is the politics of inclusion. And that's what this bill would do. I mean, it would let other municipalities have the option of, including ranked choice voting as part of their election process without having to come back to the legislation every single vote. And as Representative Simon has already pointed out, this would not be imposed. Ranked choice voting would not be imposed on other municipalities, as other testifiers have said, but it would open them with the option. One last thing I just want to say is that primary elections traditionally have very low voter turnout from communities of color. And personally, and I've had this experience with other people too, if my candidate doesn't make it to the general, then that makes me less likely to even vote at the general election. And so ranked choice voting is the option. Everybody show up, they can rank them. It's very inclusive, and I would support letting other municipalities have the option of including ranked choice voting in their procedures. So thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next we have Matthew Meyer. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Matthew Meyer. I'm a six-year veteran of the United States Marine Corps. I'm also a local attorney in private practice and the vice chair of the Minnesota State Bar Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. I am also a volunteer ombudsman with the Department of Defense ESGR program, the Employer Supported Guard and Reserve, where I deal with reemployment and employment issues of the reserve component service members within the state of Minnesota. I speak today in support of the ranked choice voting primarily because of the impediments that it reduces to absentee voting of overseas military and civilians alike. Some 60 years ago, President Truman, at the height of the Korean War, spoke at the injustice of the service members who were then fighting and the fact that they were protecting an important principle of our democracy, and yet many of them face impediments to absentee voting where their votes were not counted, were not considered in this democracy. Since that time, there has been tremendous advances in reducing some of the impediments to absentee voting. For instance, the recent Yukawa and MOVE Act, which is focused on overseas voters, but it is clear that there is more to be done in reducing the impediments to overseas absentee voters. These are voters, not just military and their dependents, but also civilians who are overseas. In fact, the estimates are that there is approximately 1 million overseas military members, over 1 million dependents of those military members, and approximately 3 million civilians who are overseas. Now, these civilians may be the Peace Corps volunteers and teaching in Zambia, or the missionaries who are working in South Sudan or Haiti, across the world. And these are people who, through their overseas efforts, their volunteer efforts, either on behalf of the U.S. government and the military, or private organizations, who are not available to vote. And so I support the ranked choice voting in order to remove a couple of the impediments that I see to absentee voting by these overseas voters. It's important to note that there was a recent survey that was published by the Overseas Vote Foundation, the U.S. Vote Foundation, looking at the recent results of overseas voting in the 2012 election. And one of their findings is that 22% of the respondents who attempted to vote could not, because they either did not get a ballot or received it too late. Now, to be clear, this is not a reflection of the Secretary of State's office. As a matter of fact, the survey noted that Minnesota had the fourth highest number of respondents in their survey, which was a result of the Secretary of State's efforts in reaching overseas voters to encourage their participation. But the fact remains is that there are factors out of the control of the Secretary of State when it comes to overseas voting. Most significant of which is the unreliable mail systems. Even the APO, FPO mail system has its drawbacks, its failings, and there may be remote outposts where service members are serving, and there may be a delay in having those absentee ballots delivered to the voter, or in returning those votes, those ballots. And therefore, for one, having the ranked choice voting allows the opportunity for more time to get those ballots out to the voters, and to have the opportunity of a replacement ballot if need be, because of the failings of the mail systems. And secondly, in working with reserve component service members, you know, these are people from the community with the most interest in having their voice heard when it comes to local matters. And these service members are dealing with a lot of issues, whether it is the family that they had to leave behind to fend for themselves, essentially, or their civilian employment, hoping that there is not some reduction in force when they come back from deployment and are looking to be reemployed, and their obligations to the military. And the more that having that second round of voting that we're asking them to perform in order to be fully engaged in local politics is probably too much to ask for, especially when there are the delays in the mail system. And finally, as I mentioned, there are approximately 3 million civilians overseas who are probably active in politics, whether they are with the Peace Corps or the missionary for their local churches, and their delays in the mail system, since they're dependent on local mail service, is probably more extreme. And therefore, the ranked choice voting would go a long ways in ameliorating some of the drawbacks or the factors that hinder overseas voting. And therefore, I speak in favor of the ranked choice voting bill. Thank you
for your testimony. I believe we have a question. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I will make this very brief. Mr. Meyer, your testimony today is somewhat perplexing, because regardless of what ballots contained inside the envelope, I think we still have all of the delays that you're talking about, whether it's under the traditional system or whether it's under a revised system of ranked choice voting. So I'm not 100% sure where the new system will speed up the mail system or turnaround of ballots or those types of things. And so not 100% sure how this is going to help overseas by changing what goes in the envelope.
versus the delivery system?
I apologize, Madam Chair.
You're fine. Go right ahead, Mr. Mayor.
In terms of the effect of having a primary system, there are inherently delays in conducting that election, compiling the results, perhaps a ballot challenge, things that would delay that and would push against that 45-day window. If there is more time, if it is just one round of voting, then there would be more opportunity to get those ballots out even ahead of the 45-day window that is required under the MOVE Act.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Meyer. I don't know if that 100% answers my question, but at least it moves it in that direction. And given the interest of time, the number of testifiers, I will just pass on any other questions.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Next, we have Tara Cole. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Tara Cole, and I'm from Minneapolis and just a regular voter. And I'm here to speak in favor of your support for HF 367. We've heard a lot of great information for and against ranked choice voting today. I just want to be clear, and I know that you're clear, that what we're talking about is just the opportunity for municipalities to make that choice themselves. What you've heard from many of the witnesses is conversation about a lack of distrust, but also conversation around a lack of education. I had the pleasure of working for Hennepin County during the Census 2010 collection, going out and working with minority and immigrant communities, explaining to them the process of the census, why it was important and why it was not as scary as we all think it is, what it does and what it does not do. When we were able to do that, we were able to increase numbers, particularly in Cedar Riverside and North Minneapolis and other areas where we have large numbers of minorities. Fast forward to 2011, I happened to be a member of the Minneapolis Redistricting Committee, which is part of the Charter Commission. We were able to create 1/2 minority opportunity districts, and as you know, 1 minority majority voting district, which has allowed multiple candidates of color to come to the forefront and to run for citywide office. I'm here today to say that the issue that we're hearing about with ranked choice voting is about education, and it's about funding that level of education. Once individuals understand what the process is, what it does, and what it affords, people's like, oh, that's simple. I'll give you an example. This morning I had a conversation with my mother about why I was coming to what I was going to be talking about and explaining to her about ranked choice voting. It took me about 5 or 6 minutes. And granted, my mother has a PhD and I don't, but it's still very analytical in nature. But we think in pictures. And so to give her the examples of what ranked choice voting actually does, she was like, well, that's simple. We used to do that when I first voted in, of all places, San Francisco, California. And for her, she's like, that is an equitable way. I enjoyed my voting experience with ranked choice voting because I walked away feeling that my vote not just counted, but that it mattered. This is an opportunity to let other cities and other municipalities just have the option. That's what we're discussing here today, is the option. In Minneapolis, we have a whole nother set of issue, and I think that some of our conversation is best had within community, but also at the city council level, and I believe that some will do that. But as we go through this process, education, voter education, civic engagement is what is tantamount in any process. And I believe that once we have that coalition together, that the fears that we're hearing about today will go away. So I would like to thank you for this time and this opportunity, and again ask for your support for this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Seeing no questions, The final testifier that I have on my list is Dave Wheeler from Duluth. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. Good to be here with you today. My name is David Wheeler. I live 36 and Bryant Avenue South, not too far from France. I'm on the right side of the street. Delighted to testify before you. I'm here wearing three different hats. One is, and probably the most important, is that I'm a citizen. Second is that I'm a pastor. I'm ordained United Methodist minister. I have served churches all over the state. And the third reason I'm here is that I'm an elected official. I was elected first in a regular election in Duluth, Minnesota, as a Duluth City Council member. I then ran for mayor. Boy, if we'd had ranked choice voting, I would have survived the primary and would have had the opportunity to continue to take the kind of message that I thought the people needed to hear, but I got knocked off by the former mayor of Superior who came across the way, Herb Berkson. So I got set to the side. I was elected by ranked choice voting 4 years ago to the Board of Estimate and Taxation. There were six of us running for two positions. I received the second most first place votes, about 6,000 votes. I received the most second place votes, which was about 4,300 votes, and I received the second most third place votes, which were about 4,600. I received over 12,000 votes. I would have only received 6,000 in a regular election. You see, the thing that is so wonderful about ranked choice voting is that it isn't just black or white. You have the opportunity to stand up and vote for a variety of people that you think are good, and you get to have that opportunity to rank them. What I think is so brilliant about this bill, and I want to thank you and encourage you all to vote for it, is you're not imposing, even though that was a word that was used by a number of people who speak strongly against ranked choice voting, and they can have their opinions, that's fine. There was a fair amount of heat up here. But this is not an imposition. What you're doing is you're giving people the option to try this and to use this and to see if it works where they are. The technology does exist for these machines. It has for a very long period of time. It just has never been approved and can be quite quickly. It was the Supreme Court unanimously found this to be appropriate. And no matter where you stand on this position, I think empowering other municipalities throughout the state of Minnesota to have the option to try this is a positive sort of thing. A very wise Supreme Court justice said that the highest office in the land is the office of citizen. You give citizens the opportunity to have their voices heard. You get, as a political person, to ask somebody, if I'm not your first choice, can I be your second choice? It really increases the level and of the discourse, and is far less divisive. Thank you so much for the opportunity to be with you today.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, I see that we're close to running out of time here, so if there are no other questions, I just want to sum up, and I thank members for their patience. There was a lot of testimony, and I thank all the testifiers, even though those I might not have agreed with. I think the last testifier put it right. This is an optional bill. It's not a mandate. It's not forcing anyone to do anything, spend any money, take any position. Most communities, I suspect, will say thanks, but no thanks. My community is included. Whether we pass this bill or not, St. Paul and Minneapolis are going to continue to have ranked choice voting unless their citizens do something about it. Other communities that are charter cities or home rule cities, they can already do this with or without this bill, including Blaine and Duluth and Hutchinson, and all those cities can do this now. This just says for the other cities that don't have that status, they may, if they choose, but they don't have to do it. And by the way, as one of the testifiers said, they may try it and say, it's terrible, it's confusing, it's cumbersome, it's expensive, we don't want to do it anymore. And they can, as Aspen and the other cities have done, they can ditch it. That's all the bill is about. I take seriously the concerns that people enunciated. I didn't mean to certainly mock or disrespect those concerns to the extent that they're alleged in Minneapolis, but I would argue that the redress there is either to get Minneapolis to change and ditch RCV, or, and I mean this seriously, go to federal court. Or if there's a disparate impact based on race, that's always an option as well. So I ask for your support, members, just to allow people like Mayor Hovland of Edina and others to try it, and if they don't like it, they can ditch it.
Thank you, Representative Simon. I know that we're short on time. We do, I understand, have this room until 12:10, so we do have a little bit of time in this room if members want to stay and ask questions. I know Representative Winkler has a question, I believe.
Madam Chair, I think we just have to vote, so I don't. Hopefully we won't need to stay over, but... you know, Representative Simon, there is always an opportunity for a great St. Louis Park bloodletting, political bloodletting as well. And just as Somali activists living in Minneapolis can have differences of opinions, white lawyers representing St. Louis Park can have differences of opinion.
We're about to see them.
And I think another possible bill idea is to simply prohibit any municipality from using ranked choice voting, and that's certainly a bill I would be more than happy to get on board. But, you know, members, I think the challenge with this is that it's really hard to identify what problem ranked choice voting really solves. And there is a beauty in the simplicity of having an election, and whoever gets the most votes wins. And it's something everyone can understand from, you know, starting out in student council and anything else. So anyway, I don't like it. I'm not going to support it. But, you know, it's probably not the end of the world. Although when the time comes, Representative Simon, for this to be used statewide in some experimental election, there will be a real bloodletting. There will be blood.
Representative Simon.
And all I will say, Representative Winkler, I will remember your comments about the top vote getter winning when we discuss ranked choice voting on Thursday.
So. Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point, Representative Simon, as far as I understand the bill, this is for local nonpartisan races. Is that correct?
Representative Simon.
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct.
And Madam Chair, Representative Simon, is it in your intention in any way that this bill be altered or expanded upon that, or is it in your intention that this bill would stay in that form, that this be for local nonpartisan races?
Yes.
Representative Simon.
I will go so far as to say not only is the answer to your question yes, but if anyone, I will oppose any amendment to do otherwise, and if despite my opposition an amendment goes on which spreads it to statewide or anything else, I'll pull the bill.
Representative Sanders. Any additional discussion on the bill? Good. Are there any other members of the public that wish to be heard on this issue? Well, I thank everybody who did come to testify on this bill. I think we've heard good testimony on both sides of the issue. And with that, Representative Simon renews his motion that House File 367, as amended, be recommended to pass and placed on the general register. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
The ayes have it.
Thank you, members.
Thank you.
What's that?
Yeah. Do you want me to? We can go ahead and adjourn this meeting then as well. Thank you very much for your time. Right, and we're 2 minutes early.